listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And boy, Fox News is going nuts. They got one of their correspondents actually got punched. Oh, they are so excited. They are so happy. See, it's a union thug. The only thing is, when you watch that little clip that Sean Hannity is, you know, and Fox are playing over and over and over again, that union thug who takes a swing at Steve Crowder, the Fox News correspondent, he's laying on the ground at the beginning of that clip. How did that happen? How does somebody who's been knocked to the ground, standing up and punching back, suddenly become a... I don't know, but I thought we would have somebody who was there. Tom Duckworth is with us. He's a union member and a witness to the whole Americans for Prosperity, the tent takedown, all that kind of stuff in Lansing yesterday. Tom, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Great to have somebody on who's from the town that I grew up in. Lansing is my hometown. So what happened yesterday?
Well, I can tell you what I saw.
Okay.
I arrived there shortly after 10 in the morning, and they made us aware that there were some America for Prosperity tents there, and that they kind of warned us to stay away from them because they were basically told that they were trying to provoke a reaction out of the union members. So,
okay, who told you this was who?
There was a coalition of labor organizations that rented out the Lansing Center, and they were distributing flyers on how to behave yourself and the schedule for the events, the marches, and the speakers and such.
Right.
And they told us those tents were there, so of course I went directly over there to see what was going on.
Okay.
I went in there, and I talked to one of the guys that was at front of the tent. There weren't very many people inside of the tent. They were milling about at the entrance, and I talked to the guy for a little while. And he seemed pleasant enough. I didn't agree with anything he said, but there was a gentleman that was kind of standing in the door, walking in and out of the tent, who had a NRA baseball cap on and an NRA jacket. And later on, I don't remember exactly how late it was, but it was right before the tents came down. I was walking across the lawn on my way up to get to the Capitol steps, and I saw that same gentleman with the NRA baseball cap on the walking around the tent, and he was undoing the straps holding down the sidewall tent poles and then kicking them in so the sidewalls were collapsing. Mm-hmm. And then the inside of the tall tent poles then collapsed from the inside. And at first I thought, because I didn't see anything other than that, I thought they were just decided that they had enough and they were going to call it a day and leave. But then, later on it turns out that no, of course, that's not what happened. There were still people inside
the tent.
They basically, cleared everybody off. This was before the police was even there. They cleared the people off and then they cut the tent open and get the people that were inside out.
So are you suggesting that the Americans, one of the guys who was part of the Americans for Prosperity tent show was, you know, basically they crashed their own tent so that they could blame it on union guys?
Well, the news cameras were already there in place, and so I found that kind of suspicious that they were already there when the tent came down. One of the first things I saw on the other side of the tent was the camera crews over there, and I didn't see any of the fighting or any of that stuff. And then the police on horseback showed up and pushed everybody off the tent, and by that time I think everybody was already out from underneath. It was my impression pretty strong that the guy that did that was a part of that group. Obviously he didn't identify him as such. I didn't talk to him, but he was inside the tent the whole time I was talking to that other gentleman outside the tent.
Mm-hmm.
And he was milling about and talking to the people inside the tent. So
it was one of the guys inside the Americans for Prosperity tent who took the tent, who knocked the tent down, basically.
Yeah, who knocked the tent down. Now, the most I'll give him is that he saw that the tent was still coming down, so he decided to help it out a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know, being with the warning that they gave us about that they're looking for a reaction, plus the fact that the tent was, you know, way too large, and I believe they actually had another tent on the other side of the Capitol steps that also came down. Mm. I think they were just waiting for it. They were just hoping something would happen, and they got what they wanted. And you know, now they're talking about it, and yeah. They're making the union guys out to be the bad guys, and that's part of their strategy, in my opinion.
Yeah. I completely agree, and this, particularly since, you know, everybody was warned, look out, there's going to be a provocation. I'm curious, as you know, a union member, as a Michigander, as somebody who lives in Michigan and has some sense of what's going on there, do you think it's possible that the way that, you know, when Todd Akin started talking about forcible rape all over the country, women started going, what? The Republicans really, is that really what they're up to? And that, you know, that was like an aha moment, that this effort by Rick Snyder and the Republicans in the House and Senate in Lansing to take away people's ability to have a strong union by pushing through this right to work for less money bill, that this might be a Todd Akin moment, that it's possible that this might be the thing that wakes up the American people to, you know, the Koch brothers. I mean, they're funding the Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers' real agenda here.
I think so. I did have several conversations with lots of other union members, and they basically had the same idea. You know, I think the rally there set a record for the numbers of people that ever showed up for one of these rallies, and I think that the percentage of workers in Michigan that are unionized is higher in Michigan than in any other state. And I do believe that people were mad enough that this is going to basically spur them into action, and not just to go down to a rally, but to actually make their voices heard and to ensure that we elect people that do not cut the legs out from underneath the unions and that support the American worker.
Yeah.
So we can keep a strong middle class.
Yeah. In the 30s, I mean, one of the most iconic pictures that came out of the strikes was Walter Reuther standing with a fellow who had just been beaten by an anti-union protester. There was a word for them that I've long ago forgotten. They weren't called organizers, but there was some word for these guys basically they were, you know, redicops. Only they weren't uniform. I mean, just, you know, people who showed up and they would just beat up union protesters. And that picture of this bloody guy with Walter Reuther was the thing that really propelled Walter Reuther forward and helped the union movement. And it seems like this you know, taking the tent down and this so-called assault on this Fox guy, this is the reverse of that. This is their moment that they're publicizing like crazy. I think it's really important to get the other message out that this was set up.
Well, speaking of hired guns, I talked to a union member that also talked to the guy that I did to earlier, and he asked him for his ID to see if he was from Michigan, and he asked everybody that stood in the tent and stood around there to prove to them that they were from Michigan, and none of them would do it. So there's a suspicion that all of these people were hired and bussed in to represent, you know, quote-unquote, the other side.
Right.
And, you know, that's...
Nobody recognized any of these people. I mean, Lansing's not that big a town.
No.
And although Michigan's a fairly large state, and people are coming from all over the state, but amazing.
Right.
Tom Duckworth, union member in Lansing, Michigan. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us, Tom.
No problem. Anytime.
I appreciate it. And thanks for showing up. I mean, it's just the whole act of showing up and saying, I'm going to be part of democracy. I'm going to be part of what's going on. That's a big deal. Tom, thank you again. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Is this a Todd Akin moment, or could this be a Walter Reuther moment for the right? Could this be the beginning of the end of the union movement in the United States?
Propaganda, propaganda. If you want to fool the folks, it comes in handy. If you want to tell some lies, pull the wool over their eyes, you can do it with propaganda.
Propaganda. Oh, yes. Propaganda. also known as Fox So-Called News. Richard in Perry, Michigan, you were there in Lansing at the Americans for Prosperity tent?
Yes, I was.
Tell us your story.
Well, I'm on that video, and I wanted to corroborate Mr. Duckworth's accounting of the events surrounding the incident with the tent, the Americans for Prosperity tent. It's pretty much word for word gospel. My son was there as well, and he's taken that video on Reddit, and he's debunked the whole thing. He spent hours and hours last night watching that video, hundreds and hundreds of times. And the instigators from AFP, the one gentleman, was on the sidewalk seriously instigating most union people. And you'll see, if you watch the video, you'll see a couple profanities being spoken to this gentleman. But on the whole, the union folks there protesting were on they're on their most excellent behavior. Mm-hmm. And because this guy was literally getting in the faces of the protesters nose to nose, and was basically almost asking, you know, to start some issues or trouble, you know. And obviously none of those folks were from Michigan. There were a couple people in $500 suits standing out there, and we know none of those work in the shops in Lansing or anywhere near there. So we can pretty much safely assume that they're not Michiganians or Michiganders standing up for union rights. So I guess all I can say is, you know, if you come to this state and you want to preach the Koch's gospel and you want to instigate, sometimes, you know, bad things might happen. But on this particular day, I think, and especially if anybody goes to Reddit and looks at the debunking that my son has done on this video, it shows the gentleman actually falling into the crowd. And he's asking, he had several cameras on him at all times, and he asked the one cameraman, "Are you filming this?" And the guy says, "Yes." The cameraman says, "Yes." And then you see him fall, literally throw himself into union protest.
By this gentleman, you're talking about Steve, what's his name, this Fox News guy.
Right. Right. Crowder.
Yeah.
Is it Crowder?
Yeah. But what about the guy who, I mean, you can see on the video some guy trying to punch him out, but that guy started on the ground. Did somebody punch that guy down to the ground, and that's why he came back up fighting?
Well, to the left, if you see to the left of Crowder, and my son was showing me this at 3 o'clock in the morning here because he was so adamantly disgusted with what was posted. And if you watch the video, you'll see anytime the camera catches anything that is not advantageous to AFP, what they do is either show it, you know, flash, you'll see the ground, or you'll see his finger covering it up.
Hmm.
Because that's exactly what happened. In fact, the man from AFP to the left of him standing there, you'll see, I'm not at a computer right now, so I can't really go through the film, but what I can say is that you'll see the man on the left, actually, if you watch the video enough times, you'll see him actually lunge forward at one man. And then you'll see all of a sudden, you know, the two gentlemen from AFP step back like they were the injured party. When really that's not exactly what happened.
So they were provocateurs. They were provocateurs.
Yes, they were. They were instigators. They were provocateurs. And actually, you know, the union had marshals there at the event to try to separate the two sides. They had a big meeting at the Capitol Center. I'm sure you know where that's at, being from Lansing. But anyway, we knew this was coming. And the problem is, the gentleman, like I said, was on the sidewalk basically just itching to fight anybody he could. And he would have got a bonus if some blood could have been extracted.
By the gentleman, you're talking about the Fox News reporter,
Crowder?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Exactly.
Richard, thank you for your report. I appreciate it. Louie in Clinton Township, Michigan, you were there?
Yes, Tom?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, okay. My name's Louis Kapanik, yeah, and I got a lot of juice on this guy, Stephen Crowder. Now, Stephen Crowder, they keep billing him as a Fox News contributor. The last time he contributed to Fox News was over 5 months ago to say that gay marriage was going to ruin, you know, traditional values.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he wasn't there working for Fox News. He was there to make a YouTube video. That's his career. He makes right-wing YouTube videos. He had been making YouTube videos for a long time, and Fox News made him a contributor, probably more or less as a nod to his service on the Internet.
Right.
Now, Stephen Crowder, he nothing he got videotaped would have ever ended up on Fox, because they don't care what he does. He was there for himself, for his YouTube channel, and then when he got punched out, oh, well, now he's got something to sell to Fox News. And that's the only reason it wound up, you know, going national. Otherwise, he would have just made another YouTube video where he tries to say unions are thugs, which he did.
Huh.
He made a video about the union.
So it's kind of like James O'Keefe, you know, a wannabe star who stirs up something that, you know, throws the light on himself, and suddenly he's the hero of the day.
Now, Tom, the thing is that video that's going around, that's his video. And that's why it's so roughly edited to cut out everything that led up to all that.
Yeah.
That's his video. He's the one that posted it himself. Now, the other thing is he made a YouTube video about Detroit, and where he said that the reason Detroit ended up the way it was because of liberals and blah, blah, blah. Now, here's the thing. If you go on YouTube and you type in Stephen Crowder's racism, this is a video I uploaded, it shows a comment that one of his followers left where the comment says, Detroit wound up the way it was because of liberals, Muslims, and lazy N-words. And Stephen Crowder commented, ha ha, good point.
Huh.
And then he deleted his post, but before he deleted it, someone took a screenshot, emailed it to me, and I made a video about it. If you YouTube Stephen Crowder's racism, you will find the proof that he had commented, he condoned it, and he even agreed with it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And that's what this guy does. He highly edits things. He skewers everything. He's incredibly biased, incredibly dishonest, and he refuses any challenge to his ideology or the points he makes.
Fascinating. Louis, thanks a lot for the feedback and for the information. I appreciate it, and for calling the program. And for listening to WDTW Detroit, we'll be back 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Harbin here with you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls in just a moment, 27 minutes past the hour. Okay, here's the quote of the day. This is probably apocryphal. This probably actually was not spoken by this person, but it's widely attributed to Adolf Hitler, May 2nd, 1933. We must close union offices, confiscate their money, and put their leaders in prison. We must reduce workers' salaries and take away their right to strike. Now, what Hitler did do in February of 1933 was attack the unions. I mean, they took down the unions. The Coming of the Third Reich by Richard J. Evans. And, you know, I mean, he's a historian. It's about the Third Reich. Hitler began suppressing the trade unions along with communists and social democrats in February of 1933 as part of his rise to power. They would attack and ransack offices, they being the Nazis, Hitler and his buddies, steal equipment, beat up and imprison members, usually those in leadership roles. Toward May of 33, the trade unions began to distance themselves from the Social Democrats to preserve themselves as an entity. But on May 2nd, the brown shirts and the SS men accompanied every trade union office affiliated with the Social Democrats and took control of the newspapers. Took control of the newspapers and periodicals of the trade unions and seized their banks. Trade union officials in leadership roles were either sent to concentration camps or killed outright. The Nazis effectively destroyed any power the trade unions had and subjugated it for their own. On May 2nd, Hitler outlawed trade unions. SA seized all buildings, including printing presses, newspapers, and all assets. Trade union leaders were taken into prison and concentration camps. All assets of the trade unions were assigned to the German Labor Front, a suborganization of the National Socialist Democratic Party. Very, very interesting. Labor unions serve not only to protect us from excessive seizure of power by corporations and CEOs and billionaires. Labor unions also serve as a bulwark against excessive seizure of power by government itself. You would think that, you know, having seen the history of how the Nazis treated the trade unionists, that so-called conservatives like Hannity would be in favor of trade unions being there to stand up against an all-powerful government. Go figure. Bob in Royal Oak, Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, Bob, you were there at the protest in Lansing yesterday?
Yes, I was. Hey, thanks, Tom, for everything you're doing, too. I was picking up garbage, you know. I didn't want them to say that we were a bunch of pigs. And I went to the tent that, if you're facing the Capitol, was on the right. And there was only three men in that whole tent. The tent was completely vacant on the right. And I had no idea it was for American prosperity or any of that. I just said, hey, you know, and they said, what do you want? And so I threw out some garbage there, picked up another thing, another container, and went to throw it out. And the guy kind of gestured, and I threw it in there. And I walked over, was talking with some friends of mine there, and next thing you know, I hear the tents are down. So, but what I'm getting at is, I believe that those tents weren't necessarily, yeah, maybe for the idea that, hey, somebody's going to cause some trouble, but also shots from the helicopters to make it look like American for Prosperity, that there was a lot of people there opposing the unions. But like I say, there was only three men in the one tent. So I just wanted to put that out there and see if we had any information coming, you know, as far as my conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, we'll see what kind of response we get. Bob, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to WDTW. Jenny in Jenison, Michigan. Hey, Jenny.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Thank you for calling.
I was a secretary for the UAW for almost 20 years, and what Governor Snyder is saying, that union officials can choose to pay their dues, whether, you know, that's worth the money or not, it's not going to work, because the majority of the work that the union officials do is in confidentiality. I typed the minutes. I saw the negotiations where, you know, the union officials would have to fight with the company over numerous things that all the membership knew was it came down the way it was supposed to. So I wrote about this online, you know, and it had union officials comment back to me saying that, you know, that they knew this to be fact also. Yeah. It takes money to pay for secretaries, for staff.
Yeah, you can't run a union on nothing.
It's going to be right. And like I said, for him to say that people can decide whether they want to pay their dues or not on the value they get, so much of that work is done where they never see it.
Yeah.
They never, and like I said, confidentiality, every time a grievance is settled or whatever, they don't go back to their monthly meeting and tell members, well, this is what we did this month. And then the other point I'd like to make, too, is the constant attack from Republicans on our U.S. auto industry. Back in 2005, it was around that year that our U.S. auto industry wanted to meet with President Bush, and he refused to meet with him. That night on the news hour, they had other world leaders on because it made world news. They couldn't believe that they would be so arrogant and stupid as to not to meet with our manufacturing sector, our U.S. auto industry, that provides so many jobs. And, you know, and then we're in competition with the majority of transplants in this country are in the South. They were given a combined total of over $80 billion in incentives to locate here. They didn't have one single retired worker to pay retirement or health care.
Right.
That's what the U.S. auto industry wanted to meet with Bush for. It was the health care costs were killing them. And union members over, you know, how many years kept taking concessions and stuff.
Yeah.
All of your negotiating was done over health care costs.
No, it's absolutely right. In fact, Toyota had been playing three states against each other. It might have been Honda, but I'm pretty sure it was Toyota, to build a plant in North America, in the United States, and ultimately they ended up building that plant in Canada because they didn't have to pick up health care costs in Canada. And
exactly.
And the unions are quite strong in Canada, but they don't have to fight for health care because they have a national health care system. Jenny, thank you for the call. Very, very well said. Amy hang on just a second. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, Amy in Coronado, California. Hey, Amy, what's up?
I just wanted to make a point against the people that the right-wingers that are saying that union members that don't pay fair share, that it's the same as people that are on welfare. It's not true, because people on welfare pay taxes, and taxes is what pay for their welfare. So nobody is getting welfare for free. They pay for it.
Right, and nobody's getting union benefits for free.
Right.
You know, they, well, actually, you know, this is with what right to, so-called right to work, where it's really, thank you, Amy, I call it right to work for less, what, or right to bust your union, really is what it is, and which is why the Koch brothers are pushing this. Keep in mind, Americans for Prosperity is the Koch brothers, something you're not going to hear on Fox News. And what the Koch brothers are promoting, these billionaire, you know, industrialists who own all these companies across America that by and large are not unionized, and if they are, they don't want them to be. What they are pushing is, you know, the right to bust your union. That's, it's really very simple. Chris in Walled Lake, Michigan, listen to WDTW. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Are you there?
Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm a teacher in Michigan, and I was not there yesterday, but I did watch the news, and this is purely a vindictive move on Snyder and the Republicans' part. Snyder was on TV after all this went down and said, if Prop 2 had not been on the ballot, this never would have occurred.
Yeah, well, I think that's just an excuse. I think, frankly, they lost enough seats in the House and the Senate, and you had, was it seven Republicans who voted against this in the House? Six of whom who were reelected. I think that they did a head count and found that they couldn't get Right to Work for Less passed in the next legislative year because so many Republicans lost their seats in this last election. And so they thought, okay, we got to do it now. It's now or never. And so they jammed this thing through. And I think that, you know, Prop 2 was just the amendment to put the right to unionize into the Michigan Constitution, which just lost by a narrow margin after millions of dollars being spent by the Koch brothers kind of affiliated groups. I think that's more of an excuse, but I could be wrong. It might be that this is bad losers, sore losers as well. Chris, thank you for the call. Well said. It's really remarkable. Mike in Birmingham, Alabama. Hey, Mike, you're in a right to work for less state.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Tom? Good
Great.
To hear from you.
Thank you.
Hey, a quick question for you. You know, I keep hearing a lot of the callers talking about, hey, they're getting the benefits for free. Is that the big thing? Because I know, you know, the overall cost, the lady earlier was talking about, hey, you know, the secretary's cost, all that cost.
It's not that you get the benefits for free. It's that the union dues are defined by how many, you know, what does it cost to run this union? Divide that by the number of members you've got. And then you come up with, okay, our dues are going to be $22 a month, or our dues are going to be $86 a month, or our dues are going to be $5 a month. I mean, that's the math. And then, and it's pretty straightforward. And what Right to Work for Less says is you have no idea how many members are going to choose to pay their dues. So you have no way to do any kind of budgeting for your union, which means might as well not have a union.
No, not necessarily that.
It is necessarily that. That's ever since the passage of Taft-Hartley in 1947, when that was passed and it was vetoed by President Truman and then passed by the Republican supermajority anyway in 1947, at that point in time, you had 34% of the American workforce unionized. It was, you know, something like 70, 80, I mean, just massive chunks of the industrialized workforce was unionized. And then... You know, that was the original right to work for less legislation. States started picking that up, and in states that picked that up, you saw unions start to disappear. And this is a sustained assault on unions by the Republican Party that started in 1947, picked up steam in 1981 when Reagan really kicked off the modern war on unions, and this is the peak of it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So the question that I think Americans have to ask themselves is this the beginning of the end of unions, or is this the beginning of the end of the Republican Party?
Hello.
On down the line. 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Dusty in Clinton Township, Michigan. Hey, Dusty, you had some thoughts on right to work for less states?
Yeah. Hi, Tom. That's a disastrous law. I'm from Michigan, but I worked 20 years in a right to work for less state, and it means more than people realize. They can fire you for no reason. They can't say, I'm firing you because you're black or whatever, but they can fire you for no reason at all.
Right.
And what I found, I worked as a nurse in one of those states. They let you know right up front, if a patient injures you and you even think about suing, you're not a team player. You won't be working there anymore. If you file workman's comp, you probably won't be working here anymore. They let go frequently. The hospitals will let go of their higher paid, more experienced workers and bring in the new grads, and let them go. And if they do have to hire back their old staff because there's not enough to go around, they come in at the lower wage then. They often work with unsafe staff levels. And I always worked at registry, so it was not unusual to come in and have my friends on staff say, oh, we worked with we were three people down last night and they couldn't get anybody to come in. Well, I was on call to come in if they needed me, and a lot of other people were too. Yeah. So they were being lied to and working in unsafe situations. The nurses were often made to work to move from one unit to another and work a unit. They really weren't trained. It's not like television where you work neuro one day and ER the next and surgery the next. Not every nurse doesn't know everything about every illness.
Yeah. So what you're describing is the problems that non-unionized workers have because they have no voice in the workplace. And they have no voice in the work.
Right.
And they have no voice in the workplace.
Can't do anything about it.
Right. And they have no voice in the workplace because the right to work for less laws say that the employer can fire them for any reason whatsoever. And they don't have the right to actually have a contract with that employer.
Right.
Yeah.
And once the unions are out, because, you know, some troublemaker talked to some union people about getting them in Arizona, and they told me, you're cutting your own throat. Once they find out that you're even talking with union or trying to get union,
then you get
never
fired.
Work again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Dusty, I've seen that over and over. Thank you very much for the call. Lisa in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hey, Lisa. You're an independent who supported.
How are you?
I'm fine. You supported Rick Snyder?
Yeah. Yes, I did, and I will tell you what, I've been so angry with the way the Republicans are acting that this past November, first time in my life, I voted straight Democratic ticket. Mm-hmm. What I'm most upset about, not 100% sure how I feel about this bill that was passed. For disclosure, I'm a professional employee making the six-figure, but I know the reason my salary is so great is because of the benefits that the unions fought for. There's never an office person that says, oh, I think that's wrong. Don't give me 6 weeks of vacation. Give me five. Or don't give me medical benefits. Everything the union gets, they get too.
Right.
But what I was just so disappointed in, Tanya Shoemaker's on the radio saying that she's going to give the employees choice. And it's like Republicans and choice don't even go in the same sentence. But if this was a choice issue, why would you exempt police and firefighters? It kind of sounds a little political. And then hearing Governor Snyder, somebody that I voted for, to say that the reason why he passed the normal process of having open discussion and meetings is it was to get even with people that went through the democratic process and put something on a petition and then hit a ballot. But yet we have the Speaker of the House in Michigan that violates ethic rules and everybody supports him. I was so disappointed. I realized that even if he would have had public discussion, it would have still gone through. But God, can't you just play like you're following the rules? And then you'll hear people say, well, that's what Obamacare, that rammed down people's throats. The difference is with Obamacare, President Obama met for 4 hours on C-SPAN with only Republicans taking their questions. I don't remember ever Governor Snyder doing any such thing or even having any town hall meetings about it.
Yeah, and he wouldn't. I mean, you know, it ain't going to happen. But excellent point, Lisa. Thank you for calling and sharing your perspective with us. Tom in Sussex, Wisconsin. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. It's good to hear your voice again. It's good to be listening to Real Talk Radio here. I'm on the road here. I'm an over-the-road trucker, and as I was telling your screener, I've been coming up through Indiana. I'm just out of your broadcast range right now. I listen to you on WCPT in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been also tuning into this super, whatever it is, kind of a conservative talk station out of Michigan. And I could pick them up way down in Cincinnati, so they must be pushing out one heck of a signal.
Yeah.
But what they're saying there, there's a woman on the air right now, even as we speak, and they're saying over and over again that these right-to-work laws actually increase wages. They raise wages. And she's citing, she says, I'm getting this from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and all these government documents. So could you just talk to that a little bit? I mean, what even President Obama says, you know, this is a right to work for less. So, I mean, where are they coming up with this stuff that it raises wages?
It's a real simple answer, Tom, other than, you know, what common sense would dictate to you. And that is the old phrase that has been variously attributed to Abraham Lincoln and others that, you know, figures don't lie, but liars can figure. And I would say, you know, this is just very straightforward. We know right to work for less, money, laws, you end up with the state making lower wages. The states that are right to work for less states, on average, people make about $5,000 a year less. They have about 30% fewer benefits, and they have more workplace accidents. They don't have a voice in the workplace. If you just think about it for a minute, you know, having democracy in the workplace, having people in the workplace who are keeping an eye out for problems, having a workplace where the workers have some say, guess what? That's going to produce a happier workplace, a more functional workplace, a less dangerous workplace, a more well-paid workplace, and a workplace with better benefits. And, by the way, slightly smaller profits, which is what's got the Koch brothers and multimillionaires like Sean Hannity all bent out of shape. So that's really what it's all about, is you've got all these multimillionaires and multi-hundred millionaires and multi-billionaires, the Koch brothers, you know, pushing this agenda because, hey, you know, working people shouldn't have a voice in the workplace. That should just be the right of the billionaires. And I don't think the majority of Americans are with them on this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The latest boogeyman, the latest be afraid, be very afraid, coming out of Fox so-called news. Second largest stockholder, by the way, Saudi Prince Alawid Talal, as I recall. The latest scare coming out of there is that the Park 51 mosque, a few blocks from Ground Zero, is a mosque, and we're supposed to be really worried about this, and I don't understand why Fox is so hysterical about it. Let's ask Reverend Bill Keller. He knows about these things. Liveprayer.com is his website. He's the founder of that website. Hey, Bill, or
Tom,
Reverend Keller.
Good to be on with you as always, my friend.
So why would, first of all, just very quickly, I understand you're opposed to this so-called Ground Zero mosque being there, right?
Actually, I was not opposed. I said I thought it was in poor taste to build a victory mosque by Ground Zero, but they have every right to do it. And that's exactly why we set up an evangelistic center right next door.
So what's the problem then?
Well, there's no problem. I told people back when this whole thing was going down a couple years ago, Tom, that this was nothing but a scam Imam Raouf was pulling on the public.
In other words, what's the scam? I don't understand. I mean, and I don't understand why you know this comp. I guess I get the competition between the two of you. I mean, you believe in a Bronze Age sky god, and they believe in a Bronze Age sky god. It goes by a slightly different name, but they're both Abrahamic gods, right? Or it's same Abrahamic god?
No, the attributes of the God of the Bible has nothing to do with Allah.
So your God's better than their God. I got that.
But the crux of the issue is Raouf never had any plans to build a mosque. Tom, it was just a scam.
So what's wrong with that?
Nothing. If people want to give him money for nothing, that's great. I'm glad all the people contributed to it.
So you're saying that Fox is all hysterical about this mosque when it's not even a mosque?
No,
I thought it was supposed to be a community center. First of all, I thought it was supposed to be a community center, and that there is, you know,
that's the scam Raouf sold people, and he made about $8 million and he ran away with it.
Right. Did you know what Pat Robertson's net worth is?
Yeah, Pat Robertson has run one of the biggest scams in the world when he sold his channel to the Family Channel, which was raised with tax deductible money. I've said that for 20 years.
Yeah, he's worth $1 billion.
Yeah, it's a pure scam what he did.
So
taking
this
tax
guy,
deductible dollars
this
to build
guy,
that network and then sell it to the Family Channel.
So the mosque guy in New York, the imam in New York, he ran a scam and he made $8 million. Pat Robertson ran a scam and he made $1 billion. That's
yep.
800. That's $8,000 million, or it's $1,000 million rather. Why are you not on Fox News complaining about Pat Robertson? Or why is Fox News not playing your complaint about Pat Robertson?
Well, because it's not politically correct, Tom. See, that's the difference. One thing you know about me, I'll call it as it is. If it's a Christian, I'll call it, you know, a gutless wonder like Joel Osteen that stands up and smiles at people and makes $700 million in the last 10 years. You know, I mean, if people want to give me money, God bless you, but that's not Christianity. It's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I don't know who that was, the gutless wonder that you're describing.
Joel Osteen.
Who is he?
He's the smiling guy. It's on all the time.
In other words, he's a televangelist.
You'll know him if you see him.
Okay, so he's this generation's Jim Baker. Is that the thing?
He's not Jim Baker. You know, I got to be honest with you. Jim Baker in the beginning was actually a pretty straightforward guy. It's just as years went on, he got corrupted by the money.
Yeah. It may well be. Money can be a corrupting power. It certainly can. It sounds to me like what you're saying is there's no there. There's no reason for Fox to be all upset and hysterical about this. There's no mosque.
I agree.
Then,
I told people 2 years ago it was a scam. If you give Ralph money, he's never going to build a hundred. He had no ability to raise $100 million for a community center. He paid an architect about $4,000 to build that little model out of Legos, and he walked around and raised $8 million with that Lego model.
Hey, not bad.
Not bad, right?
I mean, you know, how much did the Crystal Cathedral cost?
I don't know.
Or for that matter, the Mormon Tabernacle.
That's why, Tom, people need to stick to the Bible and be careful these guys out there peddling the thing as a commodity like a box of ice cream.
Yeah. Do you take donations over at liveprayer.com?
We actually do. We actually publish our donations where they go, and 93 cents of every dollar goes to pay for what we're doing, not to buy buildings and not to, you know, so I can drive a Bentley and all that garbage.
So you're a 7% scam.
Pardon me?
You're a 7% scam.
No, I mean, it costs money to pay overhead. I mean, you know, is your office free?
Oh, okay. No, in that case, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
So 93% of the money goes to convince other people that they should follow your God.
93% of the expense of the money goes to helping people know that the day they die, they're going to be either in one place or the other. And we believe, because the Bible teaches, if you know Jesus, that place is heaven.
Right. So an atheist would say 93% of your thing is a scam.
Well, you know, if they do
that, it seems like if you're offering somebody a community center bill, you're at least offering them a place to play basketball.
Out of the kindness of their heart, and because they believe in what we're doing, because they've seen the results in their own lives.
But Bill, if you're offering somebody a community center, at least you're offering them a place to, you know, play basketball or something, or play checkers.
I agree. If he had any intention of building a community center so they could play basketball and play checkers.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Bill. I think we've talked this thing through. I don't know where to go beyond that. It's
yeah. It's pretty amazing when we don't end this thing screaming at each other, right, Tom?
It is. Bill,
believe it or not, have a very Merry Christmas.
I was just going to
bless you and your listeners.
Thank you. I was just going to say I sincerely wish you a Merry Christmas. Bill Keller, liveprayer.com. Thanks a lot, Bill.
Thanks, buddy.
Or Pastor Keller, whatever. Fascinating. New list out. Alternet is running this. Sarah Seltzer compiled this. The 10 best countries in which to be born this year. You know, it's 2013. A new year is coming. By the way, this is today is 12/12/12. It is the 12th anniversary also of one of the darkest days in the history of the United States. There's a great thread on this over at democraticunderground.com. One of the darkest days in the history of the United States, and that was the day, this day, 12 years ago, that the U.S. Supreme Court gave the White House to George W. Bush when he hadn't won Florida. Today's the day. It's the anniversary. So looking at this, the 10 best countries in which to be born in 2013, they looked at material well-being as measured by GDP per head, at life expectancy from birth, the quality of family life based primarily on divorce rates, at the state of political freedom, at climate, measured by two variables, the deviation from the minimum and maximum, and the number of months of the year, there is less than 30 millimeters of rainfall. Personal physical security ratings based on recorded homicide rates and the risk of crime and terrorism. And quality of community life and governance and gender equality. These are the things that make up quality of life. And the top 10 countries to be born into this year, this coming year. Switzerland, Australia, New Zealand, all the Scandinavian countries, or most of them, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, they're all in the top 10. Even Finland comes in at number 11. Singapore. Hong Kong made the list, not in the top 10, but in the top cities, because they've got some great infrastructure there. I've been to Hong Kong many times. It's amazing. The Netherlands, strong healthcare system, complex social welfare state, collectives, co-ops, government and private industry working together to make sure the citizens are cared for. Canada. What country is conspicuously missing from this list? Us. Yeah, us. This is now 30 years ago, before Ronald Reagan became president, we would have been in the top 10. There is no doubt about it. You know, America was one of the greatest places in the world to be born before 32 years of Reaganomics. And now we actually have net negative immigration into the United States. Like, more people leaving the country than coming in. Should tell you something. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Or at least net negative illegal immigration, I guess, as far, you know, more people sneaking out than sneaking in. So, come on.
And a man walks up and said, this is a union town, a union town, all down the line. This is a union town, a union town.
Well, not anymore. Now we got right to work for less. And so, you know, the unions are just going to wither up and die. It's amazing when you think about it. You know, in 1947, a third of this country was unionized. A third of the workers in this country. Now, in many countries, in Germany and the Scandinavian countries, it's 80, 90%. We never hit that. And that's why, frankly, I think that they were able to take down the unions as successfully as they have, because we're down now to below 7% in the private workforce. And what that means is less democracy in the workplace. And as you know, as one of the callers pointed out, if you were to say, hey, I want to join the Chamber of Commerce and I want to get, you know, I want them lobbying on my behalf and I want that, you know, I want to get, you know, my health insurance through them because they offer it. You know, Louise and I, when we had a business in Vermont, we used to be members of the, actually this show started in Vermont as a business of ours. And the only way that we could get health insurance was to join the Vermont Chamber of Commerce. We did. But I don't want to pay dues. Can you imagine? If a law was passed that said that the Chamber of Commerce had to take you as a member, but couldn't require you to pay dues. Should we call that the right to work, the right to do business law? Cool. Yeah, I get the right to do business without paying anything for it. I don't get it. Apparently, Steve in Brookhaven, Mississippi does, though. Steve, you are asking, why am I opposed to work for less laws?
Yeah.
Because in your state of Mississippi, which is a right to work for less state, people make on average about $5,000 a year less than they do in union states, in what are called free association states. Pretty simple. People are more likely to die in the workplace. They're less likely to have health care benefits, and you make less money. Now, what do you like about those things?
I have fine health care benefits. Here's my deal. I have friends who've been travel nurses who have gone to California when these hospitals strike. They have union workers stay behind who try to sabotage their work in the hospital.
Oh, come on.
Patients on ventilators who are sedated.
Steve, you are. Steve, I got to tell you, this is the kind of corrosive, acidic lie that gets put out, you know, frequently. Oh, these union thugs, they're, you know. If anybody did that, they go to jail. And people don't go into those professions to do that. This is, I don't know, you know, Steve, if you're misguided or somebody paid you to make that call, but that's really tragic. That is really tragic. Elaine in Moline, Illinois. Hey, Elaine.
Hi. I've been listening to this talk about the right to work law, and it's making my head explode. But I have a question for you. Maybe you can explain. And the guy who talked about the Chamber of Commerce had the same point. In contract law or business law, it seems like there's something called consideration where you have to provide something if you get something.
Yes.
I mean, you can't just take a service for nothing.
Right.
So
what a right to work for less law does is it voids that consideration.
But is that not some kind of legal? I mean, the consideration, isn't that a legal thing that the unions could sue over or something?
Like
the chamber guy said, you can't get the Chamber of Commerce wouldn't let you have their services for nothing.
Right. If you had a genuinely progressive United States Supreme Court, which we've never had, but if you had a genuinely progressive United States Supreme Court, they may well look at that and say, yeah. You know, you're getting a benefit from participation in this, and you're freeloading. You're not paying for it. It's a theft. It's a form of theft. And right to work for less laws are basically inviting people to steal from their unions, to steal consideration, to steal benefits. And it should be illegal.
But isn't that one of the talking points when the Heritage Foundation came out with the healthcare law or healthcare law that became Obamacare, that the whole idea was to make people pay for things?
Yes.
Everybody pay so that if everybody received a service, everybody should be paying?
Excellent.
Isn't that part of their talking point?
Excellent point, Eileen. The Heritage Foundation put forward back in the 80s, I believe it was, the what became RomneyCare and then became Obamacare. And it's a variation on what was proposed by Richard Nixon in 1973, or 71, I guess it was. And that is that everybody who gets health care in the country has to pay something in, even if it's just a couple hundred bucks a year, you know, or even if they're just, you know, if they're getting some kind of tax consideration. But everybody is in, everybody's in. And if everybody's in, everybody's paying for what they're getting. You pay based on what you earn, so there's a certain progressivity to it. But yeah, we're all in, and the Heritage Foundation was all about that. But they, although they are not anymore, because it was seized by a Democrat and passed by a Democrat. So you know, it's oh my God.
And then I have one other question: is what happens when everybody opts out of the dues? Does the union still have to represent everybody?
Yes, by law. Yes, by law they have to. The right to work for less laws that get passed require the unions to represent everybody in the workplace. And if you are a non-union dues paying person in the workplace, you can go to the union and you can say, I got in a fight with my boss yesterday and, you know, kicked him in the butt. And now he wants to fire me, but I had every right to kick him in the butt because he called me a bad name or something like that. And you, the union, I need you to investigate this, and I need you to defend me if my employer decides to fire me. And if the union says, nah, we don't want to do that, you're not paying us dues, you have the right to sue the union for loss of your wages.
Pay for, so you're not going to get as good of representation as if you're actually paying somebody due to the work.
No, the union can't discriminate like that. If the union says, sorry, you're not paying union dues, so we're not going to defend you as well as we defended the guy who works next to you who does pay his union dues, then under the right to work for less laws, you have the right to sue the union. These are really laws that are there to destroy unions. It's just that simple. And Eileen, you pointed out brilliantly and elegantly, and I really appreciate the call. Thank you very much, and thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. 27 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. Could it be that this conversation, that so many people in America just didn't even understand what right to work meant, that it means, as the president said, right to work for less money, that things will change?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Might this be the Todd Akin moment where people look and say, yeah, Sean Hannity going off on this, but isn't he a multimillionaire? Does he need a union?
Is there an answer to my question? Someone, please help me. Just tell me, how do you spell Hanukkah?
Happy Hanukkah, by the way. 34 minutes past the hour. This is Albert TPM, the reporting. A GOP pollster has Benji Sarlin writing, Republicans need to drastically improve their standing with Latino voters or risk becoming a regional party of disaffected whites. according to a study released Wednesday by a Republican pollster, a GOP pollster. Republicans have run out of persuadable white voters, said Whit Ayers. He's with Resurgent Republic and the conservative Hispanic Leadership Network's Jennifer Korn. They concluded this in a memo detailing the results of the study. Huh, fascinating. So does that mean that Marco Rubio is going to be the nominee, the Republican nominee for president in 2016? I'll bet. Yeah, we'll see. Matt in Supply, North Carolina. Hey, Matt, what's up?
How are you going, Ty? How's it going? I wanted to make a point about you brought up the Chamber of Commerce.
Hmm.
I'm a union organizer. I'd rather not say which union because I'm not speaking on behalf of my international.
That's fine.
My humble opinion only. But the Chamber of Commerce, if you look up Webster's definition of a union, it is a group of people or entities that come together for a common cause or a collective purpose, and they pay dues.
Right.
I believe chamber members pay dues. I believe members of the Associated Builders and Contractors pay dues. I believe members of the American Medical Association, you correct me if I'm wrong, the United States Bar Association,
yep,
they all pay dues.
Yep.
These are unions.
Yeah.
These are unions that are taking working man unions to war.
Yep.
It's not just the Koch brothers. These guys have vast networks, vast amounts of money, and they are no different from us, except they have a lot more money, and right now they're a little more organized.
Yeah, and this is you know, Warren Buffett's point. You know, there is class warfare in America, and Warren Buffett's class declared it and is winning it. And at some point, this is, you know, Karl Marx said the seeds of capitalism's destruction are embedded within it. We go through these cycles in America where capitalism, laissez-faire, raw, unrestrained corporate greed rises up its you know, ugly head to the point where you have child labor and you have, you know, just, you know, widespread, you know, death. Horrific workplaces, you know, as chronicled by Upton Sinclair in the Jungle, and things like that, you know. And then something happens that pushes it back. And frankly, I think what happened in the period from the 1920s until the 1980s, the reason why that the capitalists in the United States were willing to tolerate a top tax rate, a top income tax rate of 91%, the reason they were willing to tolerate their corporations paying about a third of the total load at the cost of government, the reason they were willing to tolerate regulations on their activities that worked in the benefit to the benefit of the communities, was because of the existence of communism. That these folks looked at the communist revolution in Russia and they said, whoa, look at that. The state took everything. We don't want that to happen to us. And, you know, and I'm saying this because, you know, just looking at my own family, my grandfather was a very active socialist and may well have been, in fact, in all probability was, you know, I've heard these stories, you know, a communist. And my father was, you know, kind of in response to that, a Republican, an anti-communist. It's very interesting to see this dance in a family. But back in the 30s, when my grandfather was coming up, there were a lot of communists in the United States. They were, you know, and this is what FDR was trying to do, was thread that needle. He was trying to bring American capitalism through the fascists on one side who were sweeping Europe and the Western Europe, and the communists on the other side who were sweeping Russia, and say, you know, we're not going to go in either of those two extremes. We're not going to go like Italy and Spain and Germany, and we're not going to go like Russia. We're going to go right down the middle. And we're going to have regulated capitalism, a form of capitalism that's functional, that doesn't destroy economies, that doesn't destroy working people. Right. And then when the communists fell in the 80s while Reagan was president, or actually they fell in the late 80s, you know, and during the Bush presidency, that was the point at which, you know, all across the United States, the capitalists said, hey, look at this. We can take over now. We got nothing to worry about. There's no communist menace out there. There's, you know, the communist menace was never a military menace. It was an economic menace to the laissez-faire, you know, super capitalists. And now you've got capitalists who are basically taking over the world. This is the global elite. Christia Friedland's new book, Plutocrats, it just, you know, lays it out. And, you know, I have been dancing around with the idea of even writing an op-ed called, you know, please bring back the Soviet Union. It's like, you know, or let's start talking about the fact that China still calls itself communist. You know, or, you know, let's raise the profile of Fidel Castro. But, you know, something, it's like they're, you know, because there's no restraining force. And the unions were a balancing force. They provided some balance, some restraint against that raw, naked, aggressive capitalism. And the capitalists are taking out the unions. And this is a fundamentally destructive thing, not just to average working people, but to democracy, small d democracy itself. Matt, thank you very much for the call. Excellent point. Well said. Zach in Evansville, Indiana says you want to disagree with me.
Hey, Tom. It's great to talk to you. I appreciate the opportunity. I just wanted to comment about the right to work law that was passed in Michigan. The point about it is not that we're trying to get rid of unions or the, you know, Republicans.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
No, that's not true. No,
it's about taking down the unions and taking down the Democratic Party that is their friend.
They're giving workers the choice whether or not they want to be part of a union.
No, not true. Zach, not true. It's giving workers.
I would rather not join the auto workers union.
Zach.
They'll have to pay the dues. They go with it. This
Zach,
is a fact, Tom.
Zach, it's giving workers the choice of whether or not they want to pay the dues to the union, but it's not giving them the choice of whether or not they want to get the benefits of the union. They get those if they're in that workplace. Now, you tell me any other situation where that works, right? You walk into McDonald's and you go over and say, I'll take a Big Mac, some fries and a shake. And I'm going to sit here at the table and eat it. But, you know, I don't want to pay for it. You think that's going to work?
Tom, I think you're missing the point here. The point is that
if you're in the workplace in Michigan, you're getting a benefit.
Giving workers the freedom to choose here.
People can't hear me over there.
If they want to.
Zach, can you hear me?
The union. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Fine. Thank you.
All right. So you're just going to try and talk over me. All right. Zach, thanks a lot. Dave in Taylor, Michigan. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. First, I want to say I'm a community college teacher, and I'm part of the union, and I plan on supporting the union, you know, assuming that it survives. And your comments about whether, you know, if the union doesn't know how to budget, then they'll dissolve concern me. And so I was wondering if there might be some creative way that the unions could reorganize or restructure how they operate so that they can continue to provide the services and the benefits to the workers, but function more like a corporation and, you know, like selling a service of, hey, we're going to represent you for a fee to the workers, and not only survive and thrive, but even beat the Republicans at their own game.
But that's how they operate right now. They say, if you get the benefits from us being here, you pay the cost of our being here. It's like what you're suggesting, Dave, is sort of like, you know, saying to the American Medical Association, doctors should be able to join the AMA and not have to pay dues. It's like saying I should be able to join the American Academy for the Advancement of Sciences, the AAAS, of which I'm a member. And, you know, and it's like $125 a year. And even get Science Magazine, you'll get some benefit from it and not have to pay any dues. It's like, that's crazy.
No, that's not what I'm suggesting.
Not to say you're crazy, but, you know,
What I'm suggesting is that the unions, you know, may be reorganized in some way that allows them to sell their services to people who want to be employed at, say, for instance, community.
But they already have. It takes a 51% vote for there even to be a union. They've already sold their services.
Right,
you're saying sell individual services. You're talking about reducing the union down to you know, basically an online vendor. And you know, if there was any way to do it, I guarantee you. I mean, the first of these right to work for less laws came in 1947. If there was any way to do it, and other countries don't do this kind of insane stuff, if there was any way to do it, somebody would have figured it out, and nobody has. And that's because these laws do one thing and one thing only, and that is they destroy unions. And the reason the Republicans are pushing them is because unions are aligned with the Democratic Party. It's just that simple. Alan in Chiefland, Florida. Hey, Alan, got a minute to the break.
Quickly then. Florida is a right to work state.
Yeah.
You can be fired for no reason at all,
right.
Even the refusal to do an illegal act.
Right.
if you are told to do something illegal, like dump raw sewage into the Florida Keys waters, you can be fired. If you try to say that was a wrong firing, it's good. Look up Hartley versus Ocean Reef. It was a Florida Supreme Court state.
Yeah. State well, that and that's what Right to Work for Less laws bring you, is an absolute loss of any power, any competence in the workplace. You no longer have anybody representing you. It is you, the single lone individual, against a corporation that is that may be worth millions, maybe worth hundreds of millions, maybe worth billions, maybe worth hundreds of billions, with lawyers and the power of law behind them, and it's you all alone against them. And this is what the Republicans, this is the world that the Republicans want us all to live in. Where people like the Koch brothers can basically do whatever they want to their employees, and the employees not only can't say no, but if they squeak about it, they get fired.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So how do we fight back against this? I think it's all a matter of showing up. Organize, organize, organize.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad.
Yeah, let's check into the news. It's kind of sad about the you know what's going on in Michigan, but maybe there's a silver lining. I mean, who knows? Anyhow, our news brought to you by the Talk Radio News Service and goatsfortheoldgoat.com. This Christmas, a crystal heart is available as a gift made by women recovering from the effects of war in South Sudan. And you can get more information about that at goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Bob Ney, former Congressman Bob Ney.
With
the Talk Radio News Service. I am great, Bob. It's always nice to hear your voice. So what's going on in the world today?
A lot of sadness in D.C. Lumps of coal, Tom.
Really?
Yeah. Well, at least John Boehner's sad.
Right. Oh, well, but John Boehner will cry at the drop of a hat. Have you ever seen Bob
right now?
Have you ever seen him cry?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
More than one occasion.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yes, I have. Well, he's got to be shedding some tears right now, or he's going to be in January. You know, a lot of people do forget that he does have to have a vote as Speaker. So he's got a precarious situation, but the volleys just continued on back and forth, and with the whole fiscal cliff, and then they're asking for definition from the President, and the President's Press Secretary Carney said, here are the pages of definition. John Boehner has a logistical problem, and that is within his own conference. And in this,
in other words, the Republican, yeah. all the Republicans in the House of Representatives.
Sure, and he's going to have to embrace a plan if he ever intends to get it through. He can't bring it to him and say the President's plan. That's dead on arrival. It's got to be the Boehner-Obama plan, and he's going to have a tough time with that. So he's got to decide, you know, whether he wants to lead or whether he wants to, you know, already in the polls, he and the Republicans are getting blamed. And putting those aside, there's still a right policy and a wrong policy to carry out here. And he's got to decide, you know, whether he wants to advance with this or let this all just happen. And you combine this with fiscal, you know, things that are going on that are not good for the country. For example, Michigan and Right to Work, which I never thought would happen in the Midwest. And you have a lot of economic chaos.
Yeah. So are you suggesting that there's a real chance that John Boehner could lose his speakership position since that has to be voted on in the beginning of the new year?
I think there will be, most likely, and from what I understand from people, some, you know, finger-pointing behind the closed doors saying, you know, you have been voted on by this Republican conference. You still have to have that board lit up, that voting board.
Right.
And, you know, and if there's 25 or 30 people that actually go against him, which is a traitorous move to go against any speaker by their own party, in a sense, in political terms, as you know, it could cause a great problem for him. But then again, members are getting tugged in their district in different directions on this. I mean, there's some fractions in the ranks, and people are saying, hey, let's, you know, this wealthy thing, we've done our bit on that, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
But now Boehner is debating what the, not the ceiling, but what the floor is, where they start.
Yeah.
What's the floor?
Yeah, very, very interesting. But I don't think there's any possibility Eric Cantor is going to end up the Speaker of the House, at least next year.
Not for this time. I think Boehner is going to be the speaker, but he's going to have extreme heartburn, which, you know, Nancy Pelosi kind of said today in an article I read, that's part of it.
Yeah.
You want to be
a
speaker, that's what it's about.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to the kitchen. It's kind of warm in here. Okay. So what else is going on in the world, Bob?
Well, with the international situation, the White House, Tom, has recognized, it doesn't say to give them, some weapons at this point in time, but has said that the group in Syria that is in opposition, that they've recognized them as, basically not the government of Syria, but as an entity that, can provide a better deal than the current government. But at the same time, we don't really in particular know who always we're dealing with over there. And combining the fact of a questionable sale of jets to Egypt and where does Egypt stand, and then you got North Korea, which has now, quote, put something into orbit, you got a pretty international situation is pretty, shaken up.
Yeah. Okay. What else is up?
Well, beyond that, you've got the fact that the Fed today, I think, did a pretty a good thing, but a unique thing in a sense that the Fed has come out and said, until interest rates hit 6.5%.
Until unemployment rates.
Until an unemployment rate hits 6.5%, they're going to keep short-term interest rates low. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit unusual, naming a figure they're going to keep it low till.
Well, what's interesting is that the legislation that brought the Fed into existence in back in 1913 specifically defines the Fed as having two equal jobs. One is to maintain low inflation, the other is to maintain low unemployment. And basically, since Alan Greenspan came in with as the head of the Fed during the Reagan administration, I think it was, they have ignored their mandate to keep unemployment low, and they have focused entirely on inflation. So
that's
correct. This is a change of policy for the Fed after about 30 years.
Big change. I mean, I think it follows more of what they were chartered to do, personally. And and Greenspan was a very, very powerful figure that, kind of did as he wanted. And we used to wait to see what he would say. But I think this is a unique, unique turn.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Republicans on the Hill are trying to change Fannie and Freddie. Good luck. Been there, done that on many times in Congress. The Fed, I think, is the bright spot today of the news, actually.
So what's the deal with Fannie and Freddie? These are organizations that basically back mortgages, and they back mortgages via banks. I mean, they're backstopping not so much you and me as the banks. Is that not the case, or am I misunderstanding?
They are, and, of course, a mainstay of Fannie and Freddie happens to be China. On its bonds that it has purchased.
Right.
Fannie and Freddie have come under a huge scrutiny, accounting practices, and then the GSEs, as they're called, that's Fannie and Freddie, are called the GSEs, have been opposed by the mainstream banking systems who say, hey, they have a tax break, we don't think they should. But then again, Fannie and Freddie stepped up to the plate many times with the pushing of Congress to take care of the poor.
Yeah. Shouldn't Fannie and Freddie be deprivatized and made, once again, government agencies? I mean, if I take out a mortgage at 3%, well, we're out of time.
Yeah.
Quick answer to that, Bob?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, I agree.
I really do.
Yeah, this is a rant for another time, so I'll do it another time. But anyhow, Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
And brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. You can give a goat to help a rescued slave and receive a photo of you and the goat and probably Ellen Ratner. Go to GoatsForTheOldGoat.com to check it out.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's 12-12-12. The Pope tweeted his first tweet in the history of the Catholic Church. Does it mean the world's going to end? Oh, that's a week from Friday. That's right. The Mayan calendar runs out a week from Friday. We're going to have a party, I think. That's amazing, the stuff going on. What's going on in Michigan? And then there's this. When the Koch brothers funded candidates Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch, overreached on abortion in Missouri and Indiana. Those Republicans sealed their political fate with female voters while damaging the brand of their party nationwide as well. And You know, a very, very similar thing happened when the Koch brothers funded Republicans in Michigan rammed through the anti-union right to work for less money legislation. In my opinion, they've damaged their brand with working people. So, you know, just kind of put those in the back of your head, those two things. And now consider this. It is now up to the president to make sure he does not follow these Kochhead Republicans into the political wilderness by sticking retirement age people with a raw deal during the so-called fiscal cliff negotiations or the debt ceiling limit negotiations. In an interview with ABC News yesterday, President Obama said, he didn't say that he might consider raising the Medicare eligibility age, but it was as though he was reading straight from Speaker John Boehner's talking points. When he was specifically asked about raising the retirement age, and he didn't say, no, that's crazy, which is what he should have said, in my humble opinion. Because, I mean, you know, 65, 66, 67, those years are fairly expensive years, you know, demographically, health-wise. And if you take them off Medicare, which is the most efficient healthcare delivery system we have in this country, you got a problem. So anyhow, when the president was asked about raising the Social Security or the Medicare eligibility age, he said, quote, "What is true is we need to strengthen Social Security. We need to strengthen Medicare for future generations. The current path is not sustainable because we've got an aging population and healthcare costs are shooting up so quickly." End of quote. As if, you know, the boomers aging basically is what's causing the crisis of Medicare. What's killing Medicare right now is the Republican poison pill that they put in back during the George W. Bush years, Medicare Part D, which forces Medicare to pay for pharmaceuticals at full retail instead of negotiating discounts like the Pentagon does and Walgreens does. The result is that Medicare is overpaying for drugs to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars a decade. But, you know, instead of pointing that out, stupidly, Democrats are letting Republicans drive the discussion of how to save Medicare money by talking about the eligibility age, which won't even save our government money. It'll just shift the Medicare costs out of Medicare and into Medicaid or onto the states or onto the consumers themselves. And in every single case, it's going to be more expensive than if Medicare was paying for it. And if President Obama gives in to the Republicans and raises the eligibility age for Medicare, he'll be creating his very own Todd Akin moment. Which, frankly, I think that's what the Republicans are hoping he'll do. If the eligibility age for Medicare is raised to 67, who's going to take the heat for that? The president. A recent McClatchy poll showed just how unpopular cuts or raising the Medicare eligibility age are among Americans. When asked if spending on Medicare should be cut as part of a fiscal cliff deal, 74% of Americans said they opposed the idea. When asked if the Medicare eligibility age should be lifted to 67 years old, 59% of Americans opposed it. Almost two-thirds of us. And keep in mind, this, you know, the survey included people 20 years old who, you know, the last thing they're thinking about is Medicare. At least with regard to Social Security, a 20-year-old, if they're well-informed, would know that if they fall and break their neck, Social Security is going to pay the cost of, you know, keeping them alive for the rest of their life, even if they're 20 years old. Paul Ryan, when his dad died when he was a kid, he and his mother went on Social Security. I mean, young people have something for Social Security. You know, young people got nothing going with regard to Medicare. And yet they were included in the survey, and still, you know, about two-thirds of Americans say, yeah, it's a crazy idea raising the Medicare eligibility age. But despite the overwhelming opposition by the American people, Republicans have enthusiastically staked out these two positions when it comes to Medicare. And just like in Michigan, they'll eventually face the consequences for this betrayal of working people. And that's why President Obama should, right now, very publicly walk away from any conversation about raising the Medicare eligibility age. So far, the president has made raising taxes on the rich the cornerstone of his fiscal cliff proposal, which is a spot-on political strategy, since that same McClatchy poll showed 57% of Americans support tax hike, you know, hiking taxes on people who make more than 200 grand, 250 grand a year. But all this talk of a so-called balanced deal, this is just Republicans trying to bait the president into becoming the retiree's Todd Akin. There's nothing balanced about making richy rich kinds of money like Mitt Romney did, about having people like that pay a little bit more in taxes while sticking seniors, the poor, and the disabled and sick with billions of dollars in extra health care costs. Given that effective tax rates for the rich are at historic lows today in America, and over $1 trillion in spending cuts were passed last year when the Republicans, the last time the Republicans held the president hostage, raising taxes is all you have to do to have a balanced deal, because the other half of the deal has already been done. When confronted with a Republican talking point that Medicare is unsustainable, President Obama should have echoed the words of progressive Senator Sherrod Brown, who fired back, "I don't buy Medicare is not sustainable any more than that the defense budget is not sustainable," which sets up a perfect line of discussion about our national priorities. Do we cut health care for seniors, or do we cut weapons contracts for war profiteers? Republicans have made their choice. They want to cut health care for seniors. And they're going to have to live with it at the polls in 2014. But for President Obama to stand in that same political space with them would be political suicide. The Democrats created Medicare. And frankly, in my opinion, it's up to President Obama to save it from the Republicans' knives. Otherwise, the entire Democratic Party could find itself wandering in the political wilderness for years to come. A fate that is right now the fate to which the Republican Party has been consigned by their own behavior. And if the president goes along with raising the Medicare eligibility age, you know, he's going to just buy into it. There is, you know, there is a slight difference between the Republican Party, between, you know, of the last generation of the Republican Party of this generation. And that's one thing that we have to keep in mind. When it comes to, for example, if the Republicans are going to hold Medicare hostage with regard to the hold the debt ceiling hostage with regard to raising the Medicare eligibility age. Back in 95, the Republicans threatened to not raise the debt ceiling. And Bill Clinton called their bluff twice, vetoed two pieces of legislation. Said, "Go ahead, make my day. No way are we going to be blackmailed like this." And the Republicans backed down. You do not remember the Republicans shutting down the government, because they didn't. There was talk about it. Well, you know, arguably the government shut down for a moment, but we continue to pay our bills. There was no shutting down of the debt ceiling. The reason why is because at that time, the majority of the Republicans in the House of Representatives and in the Senate knew how much damage would be inflicted on the United States if we didn't pay our bills. Because the raising the debt ceiling means paying off the credit card. It doesn't mean putting more money on the credit card. It's got nothing to do with charging on the credit card. It means paying off what we've already bought. That's what raising the debt ceiling does. And back then, the Republicans knew it, and they knew it'd be crazy to mess with that. Now the Republicans are willing to commit national suicide. That's a big difference.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So if the Republicans try to force us into a national suicide, you know, how do we make sure that the president doesn't stand with them? Is this a song for Rick Snyder? First you say you want, then you say you want. Yeah, right. Okay, welcome back. Glenn in Olivet, Michigan. I've been to Olivet. Hey, Glenn, what's you wanted to talk about? You were at the rally yesterday in Lansing.
Yes, Tom, I was at the rally yesterday, and I would have been there anyway being a union worker, but I did take your advice, and you tagged me, and I was
good on you.
I went up there with a sign. Uh-huh. And on one side of the sign, I basically pointed out that, Snyder was voted in by the people. Mm-hmm. And he was sold out to Dick DeVos and the Koch brothers, a.k.a. Americans for Prosperity and Freedom to Work. And that got some attention. But then on the other side, I put on there, if you want to know the real truth, stay away from corporate-owned media, such as, and named off Fox, CBS, all them, And I said, tune into Free Speech TV and put the Tom Hartman Show on here.
Huh.
And I could not believe how many people know about Free Speech TV. They love Free Speech TV. A lot of people are questioning, what is this? And I had numerous people taking pictures of the sign.
Huh.
Not sure if they were oppositions or who they were. They just wanted to remember. I don't know. But,
well, very interesting, Glenn. Thanks for showing up and good on you. That's flattering. It's also, though, it's really important to you don't need to show up with a sign with my name on it, but it's really important to show up, and good on you for doing that. I appreciate it. And thanks for calling and telling us about it. Glenn, thank you very much. George in Cape, California. Hey, George, you had some thoughts on Right to Work for Less.
Thank you very much. The comment I want to make is about, Whirlpool appliances, and they were in Michigan, and what they did is they moved to a right-to-work state,
mm-hmm.
and everybody applauded that, or at least the people that I understand about, and then they moved to a right-to-work country. This is easy to follow on the news, or for that matter, just look up Whirlpool, because mm-hmm. they moved from Michigan to a right-to-work state, stayed there 2 years, and then went to a right-to-work nation called Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the slippery slope of right-to-work. And the other one is, can you please bring out the idea of what happened with the Twinkie group? And they're blaming unions when we know that when they went broke 5 years ago, the unions took a terrible cut. And mm-hmm. then... they went back and reorganized the business and put a tremendous debt load on there, just like you've said Mitt Romney's problem consisted of. And look what happened to them. Now they're blaming the union when it was not the union that put that tremendous debt on them the second time.
Yeah, there's a great blog about that over at Daily Kos, and I don't have the guy's name right in front of me, and I don't want to say it and get it wrong, but it was up yesterday or the day before. A guy who worked at Hostess and had listed all the information and copies of the letters and all kinds of good stuff. Yeah, excellent point, George. Thank you very much for the calling and for making it. John in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KABQ. Hey, John, you want to suggest the Dems should double down? How so?
Yes, Tom. I think the Dems should have, from the get-go, asked about how the Republicans want to pay for the wars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's only $3 trillion, and I think people.
Well, there were Democrats asking that. It was just they were mostly Dennis Kucinich and his colleagues, in the Progressive
Caucus.
Yeah,
I know, but not the president.
Yeah.
Where was Obama when we should say where?
Well, at that time he was in the Illinois State Senate.
I know today. I mean, it's been 10 years now.
Yeah.
Why not ask today and say why are you talking about cutting entitlements when we haven't even paid for our wars first?
Yeah. I agree. I think that we should end the war in Afghanistan. We should just pull out of the region. We should say enough already. Here's some relatively small amount of money to us. It would be big money to them for you to rebuild the country that we broke, and especially schools and hospitals. And now we're out of here. And yeah, we don't need to cut entitlements.
People would be willing to pay their fair share of $3 trillion of debt if we asked them. And as long as everybody paid their fair share, and that would be a powerful argument, for tax increases, especially at the top.
Yeah, but you've got multimillionaires, people worth, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, who don't want to pay at all their fair share. And then billionaires like the Koch brothers, who actually fund organizations like American for Prosperity and FreedomWorks to seem like they're grassroots groups to get out there and then get on Fox News. To say billionaires shouldn't have to pay their fair share, it's wrong. John, excellent point. Thank you for the call. Tim in Lincoln Park, Michigan. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how you doing, Tom? I kind of wanted to go back on what you were talking about earlier about how FDR kind of threaded the needle between fascism and communism.
Yeah.
The whole thing was, obviously, with fascism, you basically have a capitalist or owner-controlled society. You see this with Mussolini. I think there was even an encyclopedia talking about Mussolini's Italy.
Yes.
It was basically a corporate-owned state. Yes. And you even had that with Germany, the only difference in Germany being that it became more of a cult of the individual and Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
Now, with the Soviets, even though they didn't follow their theory historically, the idea was that labor owned the means of production, and therefore that was supposed to be a fair way to get a better deal for the workers.
Right.
Now, FDR, as I understand FDR, he tried to employ a principle of economics or a model known as the Keynesian model. And the Keynesian model has to do with demand. That in the laissez-faire model of economics, you're going to have a balance between supply and demand in the so-called free market. But Keynes understood that's not going to necessarily happen. If demand is suppressed to such a large extent, it's never going to come back. Therefore, you need a regulation to bring back demand.
Or you need government spending to bring back demand.
Yeah, and I think the role of labor unions is this. Obviously, those who own the means of production, they're always going to say, look, we're going to try to lower the cost of labor basically almost down to zero. We're going to do whatever it takes. You know, you look at Rockefeller,
right.
You look at the Carnegie.
You got to wrap it up, Tim. We're running out of time here.
Okay, so the point is you need labor unions, and everybody needs to pay into the labor union to keep it strong, to get the highest price for the working people, the highest wages.
Yeah, and I would say it's all about power. What a labor union does in the workplace is it gives the workers some balance of power with the employers and or with the capitalists, actually. In many cases, it's not even the employers. It's the Bain capitals behind the employers. But it gives them some measure of power, balances them. Excellent point, Tim. Thank you for the call. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Oh, and by the way, at TomHartman.com, there's a link. Rebooting the American Dream is available at a substantial discount. That would be the good, the bad, and the very, very capaciously ugly, the good. Jimmy Carter. Yesterday on CNN, the former president railed against this nation's failed war on drugs and fully endorsed state efforts to legalize marijuana. When asked about having an anti-drug system based on enforcement like the United States currently has, Carter said, quote, "It's a major step backward and it ought to be reversed, not only in America but around the world," end quote. During his years in the Oval Office, Carter led an era of marijuana decriminalization. "It's time we went back to those days, ditched this nation's failed war on drugs, and established smart and sensible drug policies." The bad. Richard Murdoch. As you may remember, Murdoch was the Tea Party favorite who ran for the Senate in Indiana. He was the favorite in the race until he made his now infamous comments about rape being something that God intended to happen. Comments dogged him the rest of the campaign, and he lost the race to Democrat Joe Donnelly. Now, in comments made in a campaign email, Murdoch isn't blaming his loss on his ignorance or his outrageous comments. He's blaming his loss on the so-called liberal media. Murdoch claims that it was the so-called liberal media that made him look bad. Sorry, Richard, I'm pretty sure you made yourself look bad all by yourself. And the very, very ugly Senator Lindsey Graham. In an interview with Piers Morgan on CNN last night, Graham was asked about the ongoing battle over marriage equality in the United States, and that's when he made a pretty mind-boggling comparison. He suggested that marriage equality was all about polygamy and asked Morgan if it was okay to let three people marry each other. Morgan then corrected Graham, letting him know that marriage equality is about letting two people marry, not three. For someone who is so opposed to marriage equality and giving a basic right to millions of Americans, it seems Senator Graham doesn't know much about the issue at all, and that is very, very ugly. That's mind-bogglingly ugly. Okay, Chuck, in Mosier, Oregon, you know what that earlier caller was talking about that I couldn't figure out, you say?
Possibly, he may have been talking about in a right-to-work state, if the unions, and it might not be the union that in the workplace where you're working, but there would have to be a collective of all the electrical, the contractors, the plumbers, and the laborers' unions would make a collective effort to inform the working citizenry of those states that they are de facto members, in fact, of a union. Because they have the right to be union members as much as they have the right to work.
They have the right to change.
So Okay. Therefore, they would, and then organizing that just that way, and then having an outlet for the letter to go to.
But they're not members of the union. Yeah, there's a whole series of legal hoops that you have to jump through to create an actual union, and you can't
legally tell people
that they're members of a union when they're not. And you can't have a union when you haven't had the vote, and you can't have the vote when the employer plays games and drags it out for years and years, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. This is why I think we need card check.
Can't the union just do this for a right to organize?
No. That's the whole thing. That's why we need card check. That's why we need, you know, the Employee Free Choice Act, the ability of employees to actually choose to be a member of a union. Right now, it's a $2 billion a year industry busting unions and preventing unions from happening. Because of, you know, you've got to become a member of a union, you've got to jump through all kinds of hoops. So anyhow, thanks for the call. Dennis in Flint, Texas, you also wanted to respond to that earlier caller, I think, who was talking about this.
Yes, I think the point I've got is that I think uncharacteristically you pretty well misunderstood the guy's point.
I probably did, because it didn't make any sense to me. So illuminate me.
When he was talking, perhaps it's not the best word to use, he was talking about people who wouldn't join the union or being persuaded not to join it, but not getting the benefits that the union accrues. But I'm pretty sure he didn't mean the union as a direct benefit-paying organization. I'm pretty sure he meant they renegotiate maybe healthcare or increase wages or whatever, those benefits.
Right, but the union has no power to go to the employer and say, please don't pay Ralph. Don't pay for Ralph's health insurance because he's not paying dues to us.
Right. That's why.
So there's no mechanism for enforcement.
The point that I don't think the guy's scheme would work because the employer's not going to say we're going to have one contract with union members and another contract.
Okay.
With
so I think then I did understand his point and it just is not viable. At least from your understanding of my understanding. Okay.
But it seemed to me you were saying the union doesn't pay. Benefits.
There was that too. Okay, Dennis, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Ken in Three Rivers, Michigan. Hey, Ken, thanks for listening to Sirius Radio. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I just got a quick point to make. You know, here in Michigan, we already had the right to work, basically, law, but it wasn't a law.
No, it was the right to not be in a union workplace.
Not to join a union. Here in my town, we have one union factory. We have four non-union factories. Before the law became in effect, people had more of a choice, especially on the west side of Michigan, as you know, is a big non-union part of the state.
Right.
And the people had a choice. If you don't want to be in a union, you go work at a non-union shop. Now they've taken that away, and basically people just need to understand right to work is just a union-busting tactic used by big money. That's all it is.
You're absolutely right, and that's it. In a sentence, in a summary, and very, very well said. Ken, thank you very much. Bethany in Chicago. Hey, Bethany.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call, Tom. I just wanted to bring up the Fair Use Act because it's very dangerous when we're getting our news from the Saudis or Qatar and we're making so much money from weapon sales. And I just wanted to bring up that there were two car bombs in Syria today from the rebels.
Okay, hang on just a second, Bethany. You're right in all that, but the Fair Use Act, my recollection is that the Fair Use Act was an attempt back in the mid-2000s, back during the Bush presidency, to amend the copyright law, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act or whatever it was, so that, you know, that would more clearly define when things could be excerpted and used in what's called fair use. And it didn't actually pass Congress, and I don't see what that has to do with unions.
Oh, well, I was talking about the control of the media. The laws that Reagan took out where, you know, we were beginning to see propaganda in our news.
I see. Okay. So that wasn't the Fair Use Act. What you're talking about is the, he stopped enforcing it in 1987, and it was the Fairness Doctrine is what you're talking about. It has the same word,
fairness.
Yeah. And in fact, that was law until Obama took it out. Or it was not law, it was FCC policy. The Obama FCC took it out just 3, 4, 5 months ago, finally, and just, you know, put a knife through its heart. discarded it altogether, but it had not been enforced since 87, since the Reagan administration. And yeah, I agree with you, Bethany, on that. And it's not the way, it is not what conservatives have typically characterized it as. What it basically said was, if you want to use the airwaves, you have to actually provide some sort of a public service. Typically, that was news. Excellent point. Thank you. Ed in Auburn, Washington. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Oh, I was listening to your earlier conversation about right to work in Michigan and so forth. My dad was born in Superior, Wisconsin there. Mm-hmm. He was born in 1905. And I remember many years ago when I was young, idealistic, and Jimmy Hoffa was in the news. And we had some conversations about labor unions.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, I'll tell you what, kid. And by the way, I'm a retired member of the IBEW Local 46 in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'll tell you what, kid, I was in the workforce before we had unions in this country, and I've been here since we've had them. Now, whether you ever join a union or whether you like them or not, all I can tell you is you don't want to be in a workforce without them.
Right.
They're the only reason people have livable wages, benefits, and safe conditions in the workplace.
Yeah, the math on this is that, typically speaking, for every union job, in other words, whatever the floor is in a region, in a city or a county or a state, whatever the prevailing floor is for union wages, and let's say that there's 100,000 workers who are making a minimum of $16 an hour or $10 an hour or whatever. Whatever that floor is, there's a one-to-one correspondence. There's an equal number of jobs in non-union shops where there's no hope of ever having a union that pay the exact same amount in those shops. And then there's, you know, people who pay a lot less and people who pay a lot more. And so as you diminish the number of union jobs, you diminish the number of non-union jobs that are also good-paying non-union jobs. And your father was absolutely right. That is an excellent point, Ed. Thank you for calling and saying it so well. Robert in Dundalk, Maryland. Hey, Robert, got a minute to the break. It's all yours.
Hey, Tom. I'd like to see this new law in Michigan challenged on the grounds that it's a taking under the Fifth Amendment. The unions are being compelled to provide services without compensation. Now, there are laws about, you know, taking away people's property without compensation. Here the union is being compelled to provide services without compensation.
To employees who are deriving benefit from the union having negotiated a contract, which is nearing benefit to those employees. That's very interesting. It's, you know, again, this is my earlier point. If we had had in the 20th century, if we'd ever had a progressive, truly progressive Supreme Court, I think that some variation on that argument would have prevailed. And in fact, I would bet that probably a variation on that argument is the reason why in Sweden and Norway and Denmark and Germany and the Northern European countries, you have 80-90% unionization, is because of that.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's not a right to work. It's a right to screw your union. And the union is providing a benefit. Shouldn't be paid for.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
We continue to hope. Welcome back. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, apparently the news story that the Florida Republicans just gave themselves a huge pay raise past your radar screen.
Right. I'd like to talk about that, and then I'd like to talk about something that I need you to articulate to the people out here that listen to Fox that don't have a brain to understand about economics. And here's the biggest factor that's left out, factual factor, that has significance, debating economics and who pays the most taxes and who keeps the most. The story that they leave out, the most important aspect of economics that the 1% and the top 20% and their spokesman on the media leave out, is the biggest difference is they say they pay 60% the top, you know, 60 or 40% of the taxes, but the pie, the P-I-E, the pie that they start out with, that they get a percentage of and get to keep, is 800 to 8,000 to 8 million times bigger than the peons at the bottom.
Yep.
The peons at the bottom got an 8-inch pie, a little tiny sliver of a morsel, and they pay 20% of the taxes, and they keep 80% of almost nothing. And the rich bitch and complain and whine and meow that they only get to keep 40%, but for God's sakes, the size of their pie is from here to the moon and back.
Well said. Very well said, Armin. Thank you. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Bill. Thanks for listening
to
WWRI.
Don't you think that Sean Hannity should give up his right to negotiate contracts and just take whatever the heck Fox wants to give him?
You know, I can't speak for him. I don't, but I guarantee you he's not represented by a union. And that leads to a whole nother conversation, I suppose, which we'll have another time. CJ in Titusville, Florida. Hey, CJ, what's up? And where I was going to go with that, by the way, is that Rupert Murdoch lost almost $100 million a year for almost 5 years making Sean Hannity. And now, of course, Hannity's reaping the rewards of that. CJ, hey, what's up?
Yes, Tom, thanks for taking my call. I have a suggestion for direct action rather than waiting for a referendum for the people of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Every legislator here in Florida certainly has a business or two or three. If the union folks can do a little homework this evening at the kitchen table, find out what those business interests are of those legislators that supported the governor.
Mm-hmm.
And boycott those businesses. You can see a little example of that recently with the Papa John fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
When he came out against the health care plan, a whole lot of people, including myself, sent him a message. I'll never buy your pizza ever again.
Right.
Guess what? He had a change in attitude.
Yeah, he backed
off. Like I say, every union member in Michigan should find out what business interests these legislators have and publicly expose them and boycott them.
Yeah, or maybe the Koch brothers. I mean, Georgia Pacific is probably the most well-known of their companies, but a list of their companies would be a useful thing. CJ, thank you. Bill in Wentzville, Missouri. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I've been in the labor movement and part of the building trades for 35 years here in the St. Louis area. And I'm afraid that Missouri is in the sights. We're next.
Yeah.
You know, they keep trying to pick off all these states, and I think we're next. But what I wanted to say to you was I wanted to thank you for having a great understanding of unions and for having some pushback when these clowns call in about these crazy stories about the union people, you know, turning off the machines in the hospital and some of their crazy stuff that they put out.
Yeah, it's wild fantasy. And I know about unions, Bill, because I grew up in a union household. I, you know, my dad worked in a union shop for 40 years. I saw it. And two of my three brothers, three of my three brothers are union members for much of their lives. And two of them are, one of them is more or less retired now, but, you know, we're both two of my brothers were shop stewards for years and years. One in the printers union, one in the electrical workers union. So it's, you know, yeah, I've seen it work and it does work. Thank you very much for the call, Bill. Karen in West Des Moines, Iowa. Hey, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So people need us to break down union benefits.
Tom, I think you do a great job of trying to explain to some of these individuals why right to work is not a good thing, but some of the callers and listeners, they don't, their information that they're getting from Fox News has been so off the mark that they really don't understand. And I think maybe we just need to break it down a little further. They need to understand something. If they opened up their own restaurant and they put a sign up that said some can pay and some don't, it's your choice. That business, their business, would not be open very long. In fact, it would be gone within 6 months because they couldn't afford to keep it going that way.
Yep.
The unions are very much the same way. It will not exist. And the benefits that they have under the union by not paying, they will lose those. I am from a right-to-work state. And trust me, All that means is we have the right to fire you whenever we want to. We don't need a reason. We don't like what you're wearing. We don't like what you're saying. We don't like your religion. We don't like how you look. You're gone.
Mm-hmm.
You have no protection, and you will make less money. I hope these individuals are listening. This
yeah.
is your fate. If you don't band together, you're either going to band together or you're going to fall together.
Yeah, and to paraphrase Ben Franklin, yes, absolutely. Well said, Karen. Thank you very much. You know, it truly is the case. Yeah, what was it Franklin said at the Constitutional Convention? If we don't hang together, we will certainly hang separately. And, you know, that's pretty much, you know, summarizes the situation with it. You're in a union or you're on your own. Coming up next, coming up tomorrow on the Tom Harmon program, conservatives want you to be very afraid of the so-called fiscal cliff. Please. It's the only way they know to get the ridiculous spending cuts they want for social safety net programs. I'm going to confront the Republican boogeyman with Peter Ferrara of the Carlson Center for Public Policy. Plus, my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science, and the best of the rest of the news. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.